welcome to A Voice of a People here on WWGH 107.1 FM Radio. This program is live, and I am your host today, Linda Sims. We also stream live on the web, www.wwgh1071.com. You can download free app called TuneIn. And search WWGH on any electronic device. If you would like to connect with the station while we're on the air live today between 4:15 and 5 p.m., please call 740-383-9944. My guest today is Tim Combs. And before I turn my attention to him, I need to share with you those who faithfully support A Voice of a People. Starting with Chappie's Hydraulic Hose Specialist, LLC, 1325 North Main Street, Marion, Ohio. Telephone number 740-382-8552. Logos Christian Ministries, Pastor Jackie Peterson, 582 Lee Street, Marion, Ohio. Telephone number 740-223-1515 or www.logoschristianministries.com. We have Inspect Ohio, LLC, your one-call home inspection company with 25 years of experience working for you, and they are out of LaRue, Ohio. Telephone number 740-262-0939. Logos Ministry has an ongoing announcement, free produce market, every second Saturday of every month, time 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. All you need to do is show up and provide your name and number of people in your family to receive your free produce, and that will take place again June the 8th, June the 8th. And I have a thought for you today, and it is called Your Attitude. And I get these little nidbits or tidbits for my listeners and also for myself. Your attitude creates the atmosphere. Your attitude is the result of the way you think and feel. You communicate your attitude constantly with those around you. I guess we need to keep that in mind. Good people could judge us by the aura around us, right? They can feel it, whether you're in a good mood or a bad mood, right?
That's correct.
That's right. So how are you today, Tim? Tim
Fine.
Is our political historian, former history teacher, and a candidate himself, Tim Combs.
Having a good day. Thank
good.
You.
Good.
Yeah, so, good. A little cooler than it was the last couple of days, so.
I know. Yeah. Didn't you know, you may have felt really good them last two warm days, you know. And then you get the aching again because it's chilly out
there
today.
Yeah, that's true.
Wow. So how you been?
Not too bad. So a few things to talk about here today.
And, I bet. So, you bet.
Maybe I'd like to begin with kind of review of what happened at the May 7th primary / special election. For most people, it was a special election. It was a one primary contest. First of all, we have really at this point, in the terms of the city of Marion, three, four, five, six people who already have been elected or reelected to their offices because they have no opposition for reelection. And the last opportunity that would have been in for any of them to have gotten a challenger was on Monday, May 6th at 4 o'clock, which was the deadline for independent candidates to file.
Right.
The deadline for partisan candidates was back in February. So, these people had not received any opposition in the partisan part of it. And when the deadline fell for independent candidates, no independent candidates filed for their offices. So these people are now either in the five of the cases, they'll be reelected, in one case, elected. And they are as follows. Law Director Mark Russell, I think it's going to be his fifth term as law director. He has no opposition for reelection. City Council President Todd Schneider, as a Democrat, will get a second term. Again, no opposition for reelection. We have the three council at-large candidates, and there are three positions to fill, so they're automatically elected.
Okay.
Josh Daniels and Becky Custin, who are the two Democrats, will be reelected. And there will be a new Republican council member at-large, Mike Neff. Actually, Mike was one of my former students at Harding years ago.
Really?
And he's, I believe, local electrical contractor firm. Okay. And he will be the new Republican council member at large. So the three of them filed, nobody else filed, so they automatically will be elected. And then Second Ward Councilman Ayers Ratliff will be reelected because, again, he has no opposition for reelection. Okay, we do have then the contested races that we will be having in the November general election. I'm going to hold off the mayor's race for just a moment. I'm going to talk about some of the other ones.
Okay.
Auditor Kelly Carr is a Democrat running for her fourth term, and her challenger is going to be Republican Robert Landon, who is the current First Ward City Councilman. He's served one term. He's running for city auditor. First Ward, because Mr. Landon is the current First Ward Councilman, that makes a vacancy. The Democrat is going to be Kai Mead, and the Republican is Jill Lippert. And so one of them will be the new First Ward council member. In the Third Ward, you have the incumbent Republican Jason Schauber, and his Democratic challenger is Kevin Lytle. His Kevin's father, Al Lytle, actually, he and I served on city council back in the early 80s together, and Al was a former city councilman. In the Fourth Ward, the incumbent Democrat Debbie Blevins, who's been there for a number of years, Republican opponent is Josh Feliciano. The Fifth Ward, the incumbent Republican is Leslie Cunningham, running for her third term. And this was the one primary contest we had between Tara Dyer and Tanner Hale. And Tara won a rather decisive primary victory on May 7th. So she'll be the Democratic candidate against Leslie Cunningham.
Okay.
And in the Sixth Ward, Republican Billy Mayberry, who actually ran for city treasurer 2 years ago, was not elected that post. He thought he probably was going to give an uncontested election. Well, he picked up an independent opponent prior to that deadline on May 6th. Kathy Swanger, a retired Marion City teacher. Okay. In fact, Kathy and I taught together at Harding. She was in the social studies department, as was I.
She was my daughter's teacher, I think.
Okay, yeah. She's very possible. And she filed as an independent candidate for 6th Ward City Council. Now, there are two other independent candidates who have filed. Well, let me go back down to the mayor's race for a moment here. Mayor Scott Schertzer is running for his fourth term as a Democratic candidate. His Republican opponent is Kevin Norris, who is currently has served 2 terms as council member at large, running as the Republican candidate for mayor. And then in addition, 2 independent candidates have filed for mayor, Ed McCants and Sue McGowan. Now, this Wednesday at 4 o'clock, the Marion County Board of Elections will hold their regular May meeting, and that meeting will be to certify the results of the official results of the May 7th election. And the other thing that they could possibly do, and I'm not sure they will be doing it, but they could possibly certify the petitions of the independent candidates as early as this Wednesday. Now, if they don't have it ready for this Wednesday, I think they have until like July that they could wait to certify that. But they may very well have completed the signature verification, make sure they have had enough valid signatures, and then certify. So if those independent candidates are certified, there could, in fact, be 4 candidates in the November general election for mayor, Democrat, Republican, and 2 independents.
Has we had that before, ever?
We've had 3. We don't think we've ever had 4 in a general election. I can't recall that.
Wow.
At least in more recent times, I've thought so.
Wow, I guess that's some.
Yeah, so and of course the turnout was relatively light. There were 4 issues on the, or excuse me, 3 issues on the ballot.
Right.
Oh, excuse me, 4 issues on the ballot. River Valley Schools and Pleasant Schools both had proposals for school district income taxes. They both were approved. So that now will bring to 3 the number of school districts in Marion County that have a school district income tax. It'd be River Valley, Pleasant, and then Elgin has had one for several years.
Right.
The Marion Township Road issue, which takes in the part of the township outside the city of Marion, that issue also was approved. And then we had 1 countywide issue. That was the developmental disabilities issue.
Okay.
People, they came so close, but lost it by about 28 votes.
Really?
Now, there might be a slightly different numbers when they certify on Wednesday, but they came very, very close to winning that. But here's the thing about that. I was talking to the other gentleman here earlier. I think preliminary numbers I had was that something like 5,700 or 5,800 people voted countywide.
Right, right.
of that number, about 5,500 something voted on the developmental issue. Mm-hmm. Of course, that issue was any registered voter in Marion County could vote on it. So what you then have is around 270 some people who voted, mm-hmm. but did not vote on the developmental issue. Now, in some cases, they might have been River Valley School District residents. They might have been Pleasant School District residents. They might have been Marion Township Road District residents. Mm-hmm. They might have even been some Fifth Ward Democrats who voted in that primary, and so they right. would have had another couple of issues to vote on. But for a number of those people, that was the only issue they had to vote on, was the...
It was for us.
Was the developmental issue.
Yeah.
Which means there had to have been some of those people took the time to go to their polling place to vote. Mm-hmm. I presume they would have gone. I suppose they could have voted absentee. Went there, had the ballot in front of them, mm-hmm. and then decided they couldn't decide how to vote. Oh. They basically cast a blank ballot. Now, you know, I mean, I realize sometimes you can be conflicted about
true,
these things.
True.
But I mean, if nothing else, flip a coin or whatever.
But, yes or no, right?
You know, right. They actually went and voted and then didn't cast a vote. Now, I'm not sure what that number will be, but right. we'll know here in a couple of days probably. But I cannot figure out how someone would do that. And if I think the votes were there to pass this issue.
Probably so.
I mean, of those 270-some, but the fact that it ended up losing by 20-some votes and you had these 270 or so people that didn't vote on the issue.
You know, there was somebody outside with a sign, no new taxes, yeah. You know, people think about that, you know.
But the thing is, three of the issues did pass, and the tax issues did pass. Now, it's interesting, about the school district income tax, the only people who pay that school district income tax is you have to be a resident of that school district and actually what they call have an earned income. In other words, you're working for somebody, and let's say you live in the River Valley School District. Mm-hmm. You're employed by somebody, private industry or whatever, and you get an income. Then you'd have to pay the school district income tax.
Right.
So in other words, retirees, people in Social Security, whatever, that's not earned income. That's you receive a benefit or a retirement benefit. But, I found that amazing. I said, why some people would go and take the trouble to vote and then not vote. Oh, the only thing, in some cases, the only issue they had to vote on.
Right.
Someone have to explain that one to me. I can understand that.
I had no idea it was only one in my district. You know? I vote. And I went there, you know. I missed early voting, so I had to go all the way to the Coliseum. And they said, well, you only have this one. I'm thinking, are you serious? I didn't. And maybe some people felt like that.
Yeah.
This so, well, thing, you know, I don't know. I did vote, though.
Yeah.
I did vote.
So it's a special, of course, it was a special election. It's for those people. So.
Yeah, special.
So that was that. And so that's where we're at as far as the November general election. Now, there is one more filing deadline early in August. I think it's the first one's in August, whatever that date is. This would be for people running for boards of education, village offices, township trustee, township mm-hmm. fiscal officers. Those filing deadlines are in August.
Okay.
Because those people, once their petitions are certified, they will go directly to the general election. Independent candidates, once their petition is certified, they go directly to the general election.
Okay.
So that's where we're at on that local issue. Of course, national news continues to be
That Mueller report.
The
what
Mueller report. We
that?
Haven't well, we've seen part of it. We haven't seen the full thing. But now, of course, the last couple of days have been these announcements. The last couple of days. For the Republican congressman in Michigan, Mr. Wash, mm-hmm. who has said that, yes, Donald Trump likely did some impeachable offense. And now, will Mr. Trump be impeached?
Well, they say
Let
not.
Me say this. He probably, and this would be what they would call obstruction of justice. Mm-hmm. More than likely, he probably did do things that could be constituted obstruction of justice and could be impeached on. Will he be? I don't know. Let's just assume for a moment he is impeached.
Okay.
Now, actually, if the House of Representatives passes articles of impeachment,
right.
then the president in this case is impeached. The trial then moves to the U.S. Senate. In this case, if it's the president, the Chief Justice of the United States mm-hmm. presides at the trial.
Right.
And the members of the Senate hear the testimony, and then each individual senator votes. It takes a two-thirds majority of the Senate. Assuming all 100 senators are present and voting, that means it would take at least 67 votes to convict. I think I'm probably on very safe ground in saying I doubt that would happen.
Right, right.
So the question is, do you want to do that and know that likely it's not going to make a difference in terms of conviction? Of course, the only penalty if a person is convicted in an impeachment trial is they forfeit the office they hold.
Right.
And
right.
That's it. You know, I don't know. If nothing else, some of it's just maybe a resolution of censure
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
for some of the conduct that Mr. Trump has been involved with.
Yeah.
I don't know. It probably, and now there's said, hey, let the voters make the decision next year in the 2020 presidential election.
And it may end up being that. But to me, from what I can see and hear from him personally, he hasn't hid anything from us. I mean, he's just outright and
the thing
forth.
Is, his, you know, trying to block the Congress has a constitutional right to have oversight.
Mm-hmm.
There's now evidence that this Mr. McGahn, who was his one attorney or whatever, he could possibly testify. The White House doesn't want him to testify. Mr. Mueller, at some point, I think, is going to testify.
Mr.
Trump really can't stop him from testifying.
Right, because, right.
So we'll see what all this leads to and what have you. But as I see it, mm-hmm. Mr. Trump is in fact really kind of violated some of the normal norms of the presidency.
Oh yeah, we knew that from the beginning.
I think, in my view, his election was almost a fluke.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he got 3 million fewer popular votes, and three states, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Three states that by narrow margins, he carried.
Right.
Popular vote. Actually didn't get a majority of the vote in any of those states, a plurality. In other words, he got more votes than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've looked at the numbers. And if you add up the votes that he got, Hillary Clinton got, and then the variety of third-party candidates in those states got,
mm-hmm.
you add all that vote together, you find that Mr. Trump really didn't get a majority of the vote of those states. This is what happens when you have a divided vote.
Right.
It can make something. I almost like the French system better. They have a system where they have like maybe seven or eight candidates running for president.
Mm-hmm.
They have what they call two rounds of voting. The first round, everybody votes. And if no candidate gets a majority of the vote, then the top two candidates go into runoff a couple weeks later.
Okay.
And that way it ensures if you have just two candidates running, someone's going to get a majority of the vote.
That's true.
There isn't going to be a plurality. It's mm-hmm. going to be a majority.
Right.
But that's not how our system works. That's
no.
a whole different
We got
category.
The free for all, just yeah. about, you know.
So.
What if you decide?
Yeah. You know, there are states where they have primaries, where they have sometimes runoffs, and they have to determine so that a candidate will get a majority of the overall electorate that's voting.
Right.
But
right.
That's not how our system works. So
that's true. I know a lot of Democrats that I know of, they think that, like you said, it was a fluke. He really didn't win the election. He's not our president, you know. And
I realize the electoral vote does, in fact, elect the president mm-hmm. under our system.
Yes.
I know there have been calls for to be, you know, abolished, repealed, whatever.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
It, yeah.
Since 1856, when we began the Republican-Democratic competition for the presidency,
right.
the, James Buchanan was a Democrat. John Fremont was the Republican that year. This was 4 years before the Civil War period. And, in fact, Fremont ran on the slogan, free labor, free men, and Fremont for president.
Mm-hmm.
He was then of the then new Republican Party that had just organized a couple years earlier.
Okay.
Buchanan won the election. And then 4 years later, of course, Abraham Lincoln would win against the divided Democratic Party. But anyhow, since that time, we've had 1876, 88, 2000. Yeah, we've had four presidential elections where the winner of the popular vote was not elected because they did not get the electoral vote.
Mm-hmm.
In all four of those cases, it was the Republican candidate who ended up winning and the Democrat losing. Circumstance, coincidence, I don't know what you want to call it.
But always in favor of the Republican.
And it's interesting, the one, 1876, which was kind of the end of the era of Reconstruction, it was a whole different animal by itself because they had to create an electoral commission to try to resolve some issues at that time. Mm-hmm. We obviously got 1888, which had been the last one before 2000, when President Grover Cleveland was defeated for re-election by Benjamin Harrison. I mean, Cleveland had the more popular votes, but Harrison had the Electoral College. Mm-hmm. Now, 4 years later, Cleveland will come back and win the presidency back. And so, he's our only president to have served non-consecutive terms in office, which is why he's considered to be the 22nd and the 24th president because of being those non-consecutive terms. And then that was the last time that had happened until the Gore Bush election in 2000. Right, and then just 16 years later, the Trump Hillary Clinton election.
So what you're saying, it has never benefited a Democratic.
Well, that's whether it's purely coincidental, right? Or what, that's how it's worked out.
Oh my!
Yeah, and that's just one of the little facts of history.
Yeah, that's a little hanky-panky going on in that area.
I don't know. It's just something that's happened that way. And right now, you've got, I've heard different numbers, 24 Democrats running for the nomination for president, and even two dozen. Apparently, based on polling and whatever, Joe Biden, the former vice president, has got a rather significant lead. If, let's say, he ends up as a Democratic nominee for president.
Okay.
I think it's highly unlikely that any of the states that went for Hillary Clinton would turn around and go for Donald Trump this time. So then, let's assume he would carry all those states. Mm-hmm. You then come down to these three states that were supposedly part of what was called the Blue Wall.
Right.
It seemed like Democrats had an edge in the Electoral College. Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Joe Biden actually was originally born and raised in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
His family, very early on in his life, moved down to Wilmington, Delaware, which is why he came from Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose there's pulling out now in Pennsylvania that shows Biden winning a landslide win over Trump in Pennsylvania.
Oh, really?
So if he was to take those three states, it would be, irregardless of what would happen to Ohio and Florida, that would be the election.
Really?
Both the popular electoral vote, that would give the electoral votes for a Joe Biden presidency. But, like I say, we've got a long way to go before that. We don't even know whether Biden's going to be the Democratic nominee. And you've got a number of other people out there. We've got Tim Ryan from over in Youngstown area running for the Democratic nomination. You've got several other congressmen running. I will say this. For a House member to go directly from the House to the presidency, the last time that happened was in 1880 when James Garfield won the Republican nomination for president.
It's a long time.
And, And then, he, of course, those days, the inauguration day was March 4th. He was president only about 3 months when on July 2nd of 1881, he would be wounded in an assassination attempt by Charles Guiteau. One of the big issues at that time was civil service reform, some other issues. Garfield was on his way to a college reunion in Massachusetts, and Guiteau, the Republican Party had two blocks at that time, the stalwarts and the half-breeds, and Garfield was what they called a half-breed.
Okay.
He favored some sort of civil service reform.
Okay.
The stalwarts were the ones who wanted to keep the old patronage system, so his running mate for vice president was Chester A. Arthur, who had been collector of the customs for the Port of New York.
Right.
And so supposedly Guiteau said, "I'm a stalwart, now Arthur is president," when he shot Garfield. Probably if medicine had been 20 years advanced, Garfield would have lived, but the bullet became lodged in his body somewhere. They couldn't detect it, and about 2.5 months later, he died from the effects of gangrene or whatever.
Really?
And so anyhow, Arthur did become president then.
Okay.
But I think Arthur, and apparently Arthur was so stunned by the fact that his predecessor had been assassinated
right.
by some political hack over this issue of civil service reform, he suddenly turned a leaf and became supporter of civil service reform and helped bring about some laws and changes at that point, which probably had to frustrate some of the stalwart supporters who had thought that maybe he would try to keep the old patronage system alive and
right.
so forth.
So, how many presidents have we had assassinated?
Well,
there have
been four.
Four.
The first one, of course, was Abraham Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
Second one was James Garfield. The third one was William McKinley. I'm originally from the Canton area, so McKinley was from Canton.
Okay.
Then, of course, John F. Kennedy. So, and then we've had, then Ronald Reagan, of course, was wounded March
right.
of 1981 in an assassination attempt.
Right.
And he was the first president who was wounded in an assassination attempt to have survived.
Wow.
And, of course, went on to serve as 2 full terms as president.
Sure did.
So,
I remember
yeah.
that, yes.
Yeah. So, the axis of history and so forth, what happens then?
Never know.
Yeah, that's right.
Know.
You never know. Well, in fact, when Teddy Roosevelt was named McKinley's running mate in 1900 for vice president,
mm-hmm.
Teddy Roosevelt was kind of many in the Republican Party viewed him as kind of a loose cannon. He'd been the governor of New York State, which in those days, New York State, in many cases, was the springboard to the presidency.
Okay.
We had a variety of presidents, Grover Cleveland, Franklin D. Roosevelt, who became president from being New York governor, New York governor. Thomas E. Dewey, who was New York governor, was the Republican nominee for president twice, didn't get elected,
mm-hmm.
but he had been the Republican nominee. Al Smith was a Democratic nominee for president, been a New York governor. So the New York governorship was kind of viewed as a springboard to the presidency for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And they still could be, for that matter, as far as that goes.
Right.
But anyhow, when Roosevelt was named, supposedly some Republicans wanted to, quote, kick Roosevelt upstairs to the vice presidency, thinking that he couldn't create many problems, because in those years, the vice presidency was viewed as sort of a nothing office.
Right.
And Mark Hanna, who was a big Ohio political figure and was a backer of McKinley, reportedly said when they put Roosevelt on the ticket for vice president, he said, "Do you realize there's now just one heartbeat between that madman and the presidency?" And of course, September 1901, the madman struck and William McKinley would be assassinated in Buffalo, New York. And Theodore Roosevelt then became president. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, those things have happened, and hopefully that's over.
We've
grown
up.
We don't want that to happen, whether you want them to be president or not. You know, let them run their course.
Well, that's what, the hopefully democracy works in a way in which, you know, you do have a democratic change and based on election of people or whatever. So
the governor, I think it's the governor of New York, he has lined up with the Democratic.
Well,
hasn't he? What's his name?
Cuomo. Andrew Cuomo is a Democratic governor of New York State. Yeah.
Okay. Is he going to be running for president?
I don't think so. I think, of course, his father, Mario Cuomo, who was a former New York governor, at one point was being viewed as a presidential candidate. But no, I think he's, of course, you now have Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York City, has announced his candidacy.
Yeah, that's what I was talking
about. Okay, he's the mayor of New York City, has announced his candidacy.
The mayor.
And, I mean, you've got this Pete Buttigieg the mayor of Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's the gay mayor who's announced his candidacy.
Oh, really?
And you've got congressmen, you have senators, this Kamala Harris from California, Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts, Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota, of course, Joe Biden, COS members. And you've got some other individuals that are out there, and it's quite a field of contenders. Of course, Bernie Sanders from Vermont.
He's running again.
Yes. And I would say by this time next year, we'll probably going to pretty know, because what's going to happen is, one of the big things right now is fundraising and so forth. And then as the caucuses and the primaries start voting here, the debates and so on, some of the people are going to just basically be forced out because they aren't going to have any money.
Right.
And so that's going to be a big issue.
Yeah.
Joe Biden obviously has a lot of national contacts from his years as vice president, for his years in the Senate.
True.
Of course, he was Barack Obama's vice president.
Right.
And,
8 years.
Barack Obama's remaining neutral in this issue. He's going to probably just sit out in terms of until the nominee is pretty much decided in the summer of 2020.
Right. Well, but, he should.
Yeah, and then that's usually what happens. So,
are the odds of a vice president being elected?
Well, in terms of a vice president going directly to the presidency, George H.W. Bush was able to do it in 88, was elected. Al Gore, of course, came close. Being the Al Gore actually got more popular votes than George W. Bush did, but in the Electoral College.
Mm-hmm.
So, the idea of the vice president going to presidency until George H.W. Bush did it in 1988, it had been a number of years since a vice president had gone directly to the presidency.
Okay.
Hubert Humphrey tried to do it in 1968. That didn't happen. Yeah. So Richard Nixon, of course, tried it in 1960. It didn't happen. Now Nixon would come back 8 years later and win the presidency,
but not as vice president.
He was a former vice president under Eisenhower. So, of course, obviously, Lyndon Johnson, Harry Truman became president upon the death of their, Franklin Roosevelt's death. Harry Truman became president. Of course, Lyndon Johnson became president once John F. Kennedy was assassinated.
Right,
so, yeah.
Right,
but
right.
As far as actual election, directly from the vice president to presidency, really George H.W. Bush is the last one that's been able to do it. And he was the only one since, and it goes way back in the early part of the country's history for a vice president to go directly to the presidency. So,
true. Wow. Okay. I was wondering about that, you know, the odds of Joe Biden being elected as president.
Now, of course, he will have been out of office 4 years, so he would not. He'd be a former vice president at this point, as opposed to.
So that kind of changes his status.
Yeah, that does. It does.
During
his
run.
He's not making a direct thing from the vice presidency to the presidency. So
I'm surprised he jumped out there, but
how old is he? How old is
Joe?
I think he's early 70s, but I'm not sure. I'm not in terms of that exact age. I think in just the last few days, and actually Biden actually had an official kickoff here over the weekend of his campaign in Philadelphia. I think what appeals to a lot of people about Joe Biden is what we've had these last 2.5 years has been, frankly, a dysfunctional presidency. We have acting Secretary of Defense. We have acting this, acting that.
Right.
I mean, it's almost watching a soap opera in some ways.
Right.
In terms of the presidency. I think Biden would represent some sort of stability.
Normalcy, yeah. Sure. Okay.
You know.
Right.
And, in fact, there's supposedly, I think my wife was telling me the other day that some people said, who are Republicans actually, that they couldn't vote for Biden in a primary because they're not Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
But in a general election, they could support Biden. There would be Democrats who felt they couldn't support Hillary Clinton for any number of reasons, who would now be comfortable. Some of people might have voted for third-party candidates in 2016, the Libertarian candidate.
Right.
Or the Green Party candidate or whatever.
Right.
Who would now be able to return to the Democratic Party at that point.
Yeah.
I know there's one of the Trump people are going to say, well, the economy is great. Let's go back about 10 years.
Okay, let's do that.
When Barack Obama entered the presidency on January 20th of 2009, he inherited an economy that was in the worst shape it had been probably since Franklin Roosevelt became president in March of 1933.
Okay.
And it took some time to get that situation resolved. When he handed over the presidency 8 years later to Donald Trump, he handed over an economy that was in good shape and getting better.
Thriving, yes.
So I'm not sure how much Mr. Trump had to do with all this and everything. He's going to try to claim credit and all that.
Oh, yeah.
And but then, of course, you had this thing now with the trade war with China.
The tariffs, right?
Yeah. I mean, actually, they've talked to some farmers out in Iowa who had voted for Trump, said they'll vote for him again because they're losing their markets and so forth. And so you have those issues. Of course, you had this thing with the Lordstown plant of GM closing here a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And now this
all those jobs.
Yeah, and then about, this company is going to maybe come back. Well, that's still very dicey at this point. It was some other company coming in.
Right.
This company that they're talking about is a company that's had a rather checkered past as far as kind of development goes. So, mm-hmm. you know, this is all very much up in the air. And
right.
So, so that's where we're at in terms of the at the presidential level. So,
well, so you know, I kind of figure that because people have a chance to see him as he is, and mm-hmm. he is as he is, and he is the man. He represents everything that comes out of his mouth, and people have had a chance to look at that, you know, and kind of judge whether they would want to vote for him again or not.
I think there's a lot of people who do not want to go through another 4 years
of
this kind of stuff, if you will.
Yeah, because there's really no structure to what we've been used to in the past.
Yeah, no, I mean, when you stop to think of the people who've occupied the presidency, Lincoln, the
right,
Roosevelts,
right.
John F. Kennedy, even Barack Obama.
Some of the greats, right.
You know, I mean, and then we're going to have Donald Trump, and I think a lot of people respect the presidency without respecting the person who occupies the office.
Right.
And, I mean, we've had, obviously, over the years, different presidents that were controversial at times, whatever. But at least he was the first person in the presidency who had never, for instance, had any military or political background.
Mm-hmm.
Some thought, well, boy, a business person. Remember at the 2016 Democratic National Convention when Michael Bloomberg, who was the former mayor of New York, made the comment when he said that Donald Trump said he was going to run the presidency like he ran his company. He said, God forbid that would happen because, I mean, his bankruptcies he's had over the years mm-hmm. with companies. I mean, various vendors who he simply walked away from paying them and so forth. And those issues, I mean, you know, he said, God forbid that he'd run the country like he ran his companies because, I mean, unfortunately, that's probably been about what's happened.
Oh, yeah, of course. How else would he do it? That's all he knows.
And then, of course, you now have the federal investigations. You have the state of New York
mm-hmm.
through various investigations, Attorney General, state of New York, doing things, of course, it's, companies are in New York City, or in New York State, I should say.
Right.
So, yeah, there's a number of things that are happening in that regard. So.
Right, that's true. And I don't think people were surprised. It should not have been, because he's been a man of his word. He's just the person who he said he
And then
was.
The other issues we've had here, of course, in recent weeks, has been this issue on abortion.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Let me just say this.
Okay.
Regardless of what your position might be on abortion and so forth, let's say the Supreme Court, a few years down the road, would overturn Roe versus Wade,
mm-hmm.
the 73 Supreme Court decision. Does anybody actually think that was going to end abortions in this country? No, what's going to happen is it's going to put it back in the back alley.
Like it was before.
Whatever. Remember a case, this is the early 60s,
mm-hmm.
Miss Sherry Finkbinder of Phoenix, Arizona.
Okay.
Wealthy family out of Phoenix, Arizona. There was a drug called thalidomide, which was, I believe, supposed to have been a fertility drug.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out it had bad side effects, created missing, deformed children.
Okay.
She tried to get an abortion at that time, couldn't get it, so she ended up, they had the resources, they flew to Sweden, and she had her abortion in Sweden. At the time, that was the issue.
Right.
And you now going to try to take this in terms of women's reproductive rights,
mm-hmm.
whatever. I think if this, and I'm not sure the Supreme Court is going to move in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
They may try to do some things on the edges. Actually, key one there is Chief Justice John Roberts. Now, John Roberts is Catholic.
Yeah.
He has been generally on the side of some of these restrictions. But I'm not sure, as the Chief Justice of the United States, he wants to be a part of a court majority that's going to overturn the whole thing, because I think that would set up a major explosion.
Right.
We're going to see already demonstrations. And frankly, some of these laws have been restricted, that have been passed already in Alabama, even Ohio. They're not going to, I mean, the federal courts are going to block them from being in place.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's it. One other issue here, I'm going to kind of flip over another issue. several weeks ago, a federal panel of judges ruled Ohio's congressional districts unconstitutional, gave the state, I think, until June 14th to come up with a new congressional district map.
Okay.
Now, many of the, and actually it was Republicans who were being sued on this thing, they feel that the U.S. Supreme Court will eventually stay the order.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. But if they don't, and there's, they reach the deadline, the courts have given some guidance as to what they want to do in terms of developing a map that would have not as many splits of counties and communities and mm-hmm. so forth. Also, that the court could name what is called a special master. This would be an individual who would come in and draw up a new map, and in fact, the court would impose a map. Now, this would be just for the 2020 election.
Right.
Because after 2020, of course, is a census year, and the official reason for the census is to determine states' representation in the U.S. House for the next 10 years. So starting in 2022, we will have a likely a different map, but it could be the effect of a new map for 2020 is the 2022 map would be a little less, let me put it this way, a new map in 2020 would be not as, how should I say, malapportioned as maybe the current map is, or gerrymandered is, mm-hmm. as the current map is. And they threw out the Michigan map, been thrown out by another
panel. And this is for redistricting.
For redistricting the federal congressional district, And Ohio did pass a measure dealing with legislative redistricting here in just the last couple of years.
Okay.
One other thing, and this is totally kind of off the radar altogether. When the state budget was approved, or transportation budget was approved in March, one of the things they did was eliminated the requirement for a front license plate in Ohio, starting actually July 1 of 2020. But I think people have heard about this fact that front license plate being eliminated, and they may have even heard about July, but in some cases they may think it's this July rather than July of a year from now.
Okay.
Because I've already seen a number of people taking their plates are being off. They may have it up in the dash of their car for the next couple months. And I think what's going to happen, and I would not be surprised come July of this year, that people think, all right, this law has now changed, and you're going to see a number of people removing their front license plates, which is about a year early.
Right.
And I'm not sure the police are really going to, I mean, here's the thing. If you have thousands of people doing this, the compliance with the law is going to be almost collapsing.
Right.
And frankly, the General Assembly should have made it effective July 1 of this year.
They should have.
Rather than wait for a year.
Yeah. Like you say, people get that.
The thing is,
confused.
All the states around us are just states that just require one plate.
In
Kentucky,
back.
Indiana,
right.
Michigan,
even Georgia.
Pennsylvania, Georgia,
yeah.
Florida.
Yeah.
I mean, these are states that have been these one plate states for a number of years.
Right.
And West Virginia is another one. And so, you know, I know the police probably don't want to hear this about they need to be able to see a front view. Well, the fact of the matter is you have a lot of people from other states that travel through Ohio that don't have
all
the front plate anyhow.
That's right.
So, I mean, I think that argument was always rather weak. I've been an advocate for years going to one plate. And I didn't realize there was so much other support out there. But
yes.
So it's been
approved. It doesn't make much sense anyway, because usually when a police get you, it's from the rear. Right, just pull on over. Well, thank you, Tim, for your time and your expert opinions and bringing us up to date politically. Mm-hmm. And thank you for listening to A Voice of a People with Linda Sims here on WWGH 107.1 FM radio. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your continued support. And you're taking a vacation this year?
Yes, we're going in June. We're going to be away for about 10 days.
Well, good. I'm glad I caught you before you left. So thank you for being here with me once again. And thank you, audience, for listening to A Voice of a People.
Okay.
And tomorrow we will be on again at 4:15 till 5 o'clock. Okay. So until next time, be blessed. I was going to share with you who's going to be here tomorrow if I can get the information fast enough, but guess I can't. So thank you. Bye-bye.
This is WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, your place for the latest news in politics. From Scott Spears at the 2016 Republican National Convention.
Good morning, we're on the air. Hey, Charlie, it's Scott.
Scott? Oh, wow. Okay, we've been wanting to hear from you, Scott.
Well, I tell you, this morning I did something different. Yesterday we were outside with the protesters, so today I made sure we got here a little earlier, got through the checkpoints, and I am actually calling you from Cleveland, Ohio, Republican National Convention, inside. I am sitting right now inside the Quicken Loans Arena looking at the Oregon delegation from the rafters.
No kidding, you're among the seats.
I am in the seats right now. I can see Oregon and Indiana and New Hampshire. I am in the arena.
Wow. Say, Scott, were you there last night for Cruz?
I was, and let me tell you, one of the discussions yesterday certainly was on the division feeling here at the Republican National Convention, and if the boos you heard on television was something last night, you should have heard the boos in this arena.
No kidding.
To Republican candidate for president, Donald Trump.
We welcome to these microphones Donald Trump. Donald, how are you?
God, how are you?
Doing very well. What a busy week for you, sir.
I have to tell you, I have not slept in days. I'm very, very excited. This is going to be a phenomenal, phenomenal convention, probably the biggest star-studded convention you've ever seen. We've got huge, huge stars. We've got Gary Busey, LaToya Jackson, Jose Canseco, some of the really, really big names from Celebrity Apprentice, and I think it really, really is.
The 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, commenting on Hillary Clinton.
Do you have, in closing this week, do you have a favorite Hillary Clinton story?
Well, you know, I would see her quite often. One of the things I most remember her about was when Sacagawea was introduced. She was in charge of that, the whole ceremony and everything. She was the master of ceremonies. And we had all the Indians there and everything, the Indians.